S&A Investor Radio looks beyond the regular headlines heard on mainstream financial media to bring you unscripted interviews and breaking commentary direct from Wall Street, right to you on Main Street.
How's it going out there? It's Wednesday, May 22nd, and I'm Frank Curzio, host of the S&A Investor Podcast, where I break down the headlines and tell you what's really moving these markets. Well, taking another vacation this week. Actually, it's not a vacation. Kind of feels like one sometimes, this one that I'm going away. It'll be one of the most important conferences of the year. It's a Stansberry Editors Conference. Mentioned it a couple of times in the past few weeks. It's being held in West Virginia, Greenbrier, where all of our editors, including myself, Ferris, Ifrig, Batty Alley, Sugaroo, Jeff Clark, Porter, we'll have a big conference where we present our favorite ideas over the next 12 months. We also invite money managers, other newsletter writers, analysts to speak, share their favorite ideas. And this includes people like Rick Rule, who's been on this podcast, Doug Casey, Marin Katusa, that's Rick Rule's right-hand man, great investor in the mining space, who I'm looking forward to talking to because he always has great ideas, but the sector's gotten crushed so much. I want to hear what he has to say. Me being Faber, great numbers guy, fantastic. You're looking at one of the smartest guys in the industry. John Duty, also gold analyst, looking forward to speaking to him, his thoughts on gold. The gold's getting crushed. It really is a great experience. I mean, it's going to sound a little funny and more vacationist when I say, we play golf, we eat dinner together, basically, have a lot of fun, but we're networking the entire time. And I can't tell you how many great ideas have come from this conference, especially for my newsletters. In fact, I'm surprised most investment firms don't hold these conferences because it's really cool. It's laid back. We hang out. It's business, but in a hangout type of way where we're discussing new ideas, how we can make more money for our products, what our subscribers want, what they're listening to, what worked over the past 12 months, what hasn't worked. And it's really one of my favorite conferences. Plus, I get the chance to see all the guys at Stansberry because, we operate all over the place, not always at the same office. And it's really cool. But anyway, this podcast is going to be a tiny bit shorter than usual. In fact, it's going to be mostly my interview with one of the best analysts I know, and that's Andrew Horowitz. Andrew's hosted Disciplined Investor Podcast, Disciplined Investor Money Manager, really, really good friend, as you guys know, and a market junkie, just like me. So we're going to break down the markets, the economy, China, Japan, currencies, and more important, we're going to do an interesting segment. We're going to share our favorite ideas at the end. It's about 6 to 10 minutes. It's basically 6 stocks in 6 minutes. He's going to give his 3 favorite ideas. I'm going to give my 3 favorite ideas. And this way, because I know listeners love new ideas, so it's fantastic. We're going to get into so much different stuff. And here's that interview right now. I want to welcome Andrew Horowitz back to the show. Andrew is the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast, which is the second best podcast on iTunes. he is a money manager, also a good friend. How's it going, buddy?
Yeah, it's great. My podcast is only the number one in one circumstance, and that's when you're on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks. I'm going to pat myself on the back for that one. But, I actually heard that you're starting a new fund. It's a long only fund. You could never go short again because the market's going to go higher forever. Is that right?
Yeah. No, that was actually an email I thought I got from the SEC and from the Fed. No, they said you can only do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, what's your take on this market? We're up. Let me ask you this. Are you nervous here? I mean, we do have earnings at record highs. We're seeing pretty strong economic data, but we're up for 6 straight months. Are you nervous here? Or are you just going to follow the trend and you think this will keep going on for maybe another 6 months?
I mean, first of all, you got to follow the trend as best as possible. And one of the things that's interesting is, when you see those dips that are happening, whether it's a day or whether it's within, we'll call it 2 hours in the afternoon sometime, it's almost like buyers get real mad. The bulls get really pissed off, and especially if you have a down day, they get really mad and they come back the next day and just double it up. And, there's a continual bid to stocks in the U.S. And I think a lot of that has to do, it's very interesting because I really wanted to trace back where this is all coming from. And if you really think about it for a second, forget about the U.S. economics, forget about earnings, look at the fact that there is a need for money to believing certain areas. For example, who in their right mind wants to hold their money in yen with what's going on there? I mean, you have, yes, the stock market is doing great there, up 50-something% this year. The Mother's Index is up like 125% this year, the tech index. And at the same time, though, you have a 20% drop in the yen. And so if you own bonds, if you own anything other than stocks right now in Japan, you're getting hammered. So there is a clear move of money from Japan, from China, from Latin America somewhere. And they're even buying the bonds of the peripheral countries of Europe, which really nobody in their right mind that can put pencil to paper would do. But because yields are so much better, why not sell the yen with the government's approval, the G7, the G20 approval, and just put it into that? So there's this kind of the economic numbers don't matter. Look at what happened with manufacturing this week. Look what happened with the continuation of the we saw a bump up in the continuing claims. You know, look at what's happened. That doesn't seem to matter. And when something doesn't matter, whether it's earnings, whether it's, you know, the fact that we have the largest spread that we've ever had with earnings growth and revenue growth, because revenues are not coming in great. And when you're seeing that everybody is not only buying dips, but they're also buying falling knives, I think that says something to put about what the nature of this market is all about.
It is interesting, some of the points you bring up too. I would tell you, even from a trader's perspective, when I have traders on here, and even the things that I look at, and again, you're more of a trader than I am. I'm probably more of a fundamental guy, if that's okay to say. But even the traders tell me, I mean, there's so many overbought conditions that have existed for the past 3 months that it seems like, you know, every time they try to go short, it's almost they get blown out of the water. You're looking at companies with huge short positions. Just continue to look at Tesla Motors. I mean, just unbelievable. It's up, what is it, about 100% in a couple of weeks. You know, huge short position. They finally report a profit. The stock went through the roof now. I mean, what do you tell investors? What do you tell clients here? Because it seems like the prudent move here, and think what I was saying at least for the past 6 weeks is not go short the market. But you know what? We're up so much and we've done so well and we've been able to ride this trend. At least my subscribers have. They say, you know what? Take a little bit off the table here and take some profits up here. It turned out to be a terrible strategy. Not terrible. It's not like I'm shorting the market here. But what do you tell your clients with stocks up 6 months in a row? Could we possibly go up another 6 months? I mean, what are you telling your clients here?
Well, that's a good question, because we try to stick to a strategy where we're both long and short, and not equally, but, you know, long and short positions. And, you know, there are those positions that will fall out, and you have to kind of these days take your short positions much more quickly. And sometimes even nailing those quickly is tough to do. You know, it's almost like scalp trading is the only way to do this on the short. But, you know, the thing is that I agree with you. There are many overbought conditions. As a matter of fact, there's several that I looked at recently in terms of even long-term weekly and monthly levels that are severely overbought. Question is, where do you put your money otherwise? And, you know, look at back to Tesla for a second and to talk about the absolute insanity. There were three particular stocks that I watched over the last couple of weeks, and I watched how they reacted to a news item. And that news item was that there's going to be a secondary offering. And on a couple of them, it was insider selling. So now you have a secondary, which is kind of a negative for dilution, right? And you have shareholders, insiders selling, which is kind of a negative also, not a terrible, you know, but it is a negative. And there were some significant amounts of money. One of them was Triple D, the 3D printing company. And that company issued about 2.5 million shares or so, and a lot of insiders were selling. The stock was down about 7% on the news. The next day it comes back to about even. The next day it comes back to about even after dropping again. The Thursday when they priced it out and then it was actually going to sell after Thursday, they priced it at 40. And the stock goes down again and then comes back up. And by the way, by the end of Thursday, it was at 43. So the company is pegging the price at 40. And yet the markets are still bidding up the price of the stock to 43. Now it's, I don't know, 50 something, or it's 49. Mm-hmm. So the point is that this happened with Tesla also. Tesla comes out after the market closes with a share offering. They also said they're going to be using the proceeds to extinguish their debt, which was weird because debt's kind of cheap these days, but they're going to pay back the government the loans that they borrowed. And then Musk came in and said he's going to be buying $100 million worth of the stock. The stock originally dropped 4%, and it was up 8% the next day.
It was kind of amazing that offering, though. I mean, the stock was, what, 40 not long ago, 30 not long ago. It's 90, and they got the offering done with absolutely no problem.
No problem. I mean, no problem at all. It's amazing how, you know, you have this market that is ravenous for equities and not only dividend paying stocks, but look at IBM. IBM came out with a nauseating quarter. Stock goes down, what, 7% for a day. That's it.
For a day. Yeah, exactly.
That was it. And then you have, you know, Warren Buffett buying more of it, and you have, you know, the company continuing with repurchases. But, you know, we have a lot of companies, a lot, that are coming out with higher dividends, and they're also doing share buyback programs. So who knows how much of the actual market action is from companies doing stock buybacks. So the economics don't matter right now. Let's just get that on the table, okay? Unless they're good. You know, the economics really don't matter. There's a big drop in manufacturing. A lot of other areas are looking soft. There's a bifurcation in the markets. You have the employment, the housing, and retail seemingly doing okay. But you have the manufacturing, which underpins a lot of that, by the way, not doing well at all. I mean, really not doing well. But that doesn't seem to matter.
Yeah, it is interesting, too, how you said, you know, the stock buybacks. You're seeing that reflected. I mean, these companies have strong balance sheets. They're buying bad stock, which is going to, you know, result in less shares outstanding and almost artificially make earnings higher. And you're seeing that happen because, you know, if you look at the numbers, you know, earnings season's over. I think it's almost 70% of the companies beat earnings expectation. And they beat them pretty good, too. I mean, I think it was 0.7% they were expecting before the quarter, and we grew at 4% on earnings, which is a blowout. But on the revenue side, it's what, 45% of companies?
Terrible. Terrible,
you know,
numbers.
It's interesting how, you know, the manipulation of earnings, when I say manipulation, it's not illegal. I mean, it's borderline, but, you know, it's legal in an accounting sense. But it's just kind of funny to see how these companies, what they could do to make sure they meet their earnings number because they're not growing sales anymore. Even a company like Coca-Cola, sales are down year over year. And I guess that's what brings me to my next question, something you mentioned about dividend-paying stocks. Another question, does this make you nervous? Because it seems like we're at a revaluation stage. And whenever we revaluate something, whatever it's a sector or industry, it really scares the crap out of me. And, you know, good examples of this in 1999, when you saw internet companies going through the roof, the PEG ratio was there. The PEG, you know, the growth justifies 120 PE. We're fine. And, you know, the industry got wiped out. So many companies went under. So the same thing with housing, used to going up 1%, 2% a year. It went up, what is it, 4 straight years, 20% plus. And everyone's like, no, housing goes up forever. It's okay. This, you know, this was due and look what happened. Now, you know, I see companies like McDonald's, Coca-Cola, P&G trading at 17 to 20 times forward earnings. You know, and now I hear a lot of analysts coming out, well, interest rates are low, so these need to be readjusted. So they could trade at 22 to 25 times forward earnings, and that's okay. And I have to be honest with you, Andrew, when I hear stuff like that, it scares the hell out of me because it doesn't make sense, and it never made sense in the history of stocks. But now, you know, people look at other factors and say, wait, we need to reevaluate. And whenever I hear reevaluate, it really scares the crap out of me.
Well, it's excuses of what it is, but it's just classic with the fact that when economists come out and they talk about how, hey, you know, oil prices are up, gas prices at the pump are up dramatically, but that really doesn't have too much of an effect on the economy. Recently we hear, you know, gas prices have been dropping down, and that's good because people have more money to spend. I'm thinking, wait a minute, how is that possible that higher prices don't affect the economy, don't affect spending, but lower prices are beneficial? You know, that kind of thing just doesn't make any sense. And also, we've seen something very fascinating. This is at the core of all this, by the way. The whole deal we're talking about right now is all about currencies. And one of the things that's very odd is that we've seen the dollar clip 84 recently, which is pretty substantially high, and the yen continue to move down. The euro starting to move down again. And traditionally, when you have a dollar that's rising, those assets that are priced in dollars, like crude and gold, will go down. Gold has been moving lower. But crude is just sticking there like at, you know, 95, 96. And that's odd, especially when we have inventories, by the way, that are the highest in 20 years. And if you look back at the monthly numbers, because usually they only quote the weekly numbers, when you look back at the monthly numbers, they go back to the highest currently since 1931. So there's plenty of oil. The Saudis are pumping more. And the fact is that we have in the United States more exploration finds, et cetera, and we're doing it domestically. But yet oil prices magically seem to stay at 90, 95, 96. And when they do drop down from a fundamental reason to like 92, 92 and a half, they pop right back up the same day. There's a lot of risk in the system. And a lot of this comes because the Japanese have done QE that we did originally times about five. And they are really supposedly wink, wink, not trying to bring down the value of the yen, but what they're trying to do is reinvigorate their economy. And they did have a better GDP number recently. They were at 3.5 or 6 or something like that, which is good. But how much of that really is sustainable if while exports they can do. The problem is that their imports are much more expensive. The fact that oil is going up in price is killing them because their yen is worth so much less. And the collateral damage to the other countries around them, like in particular Korea, where Korea, it's like walking into a mall and there's two stores that sell the exact same things. The store on the left, being Korea, sells it for X. The store on the right, which is Japan, sells it for X minus 20% because the currency is much lower. Well, what do you buy? Well, you know, that's why you're finding that Korea is just apoplectic. You know, we told China, hey, China, you need to increase your currency. But yet that's good for your economy. But yet we give the thumbs up to Japan for devaluing the currency, which is right.
Yeah, no, I love talking currencies with you. And also you brought up a real great point on how, you know, the dollar is going higher and, you know, oil prices are going higher. And that brings me, you know, to the first question I asked you. Yeah, it's a real difficult market for traders. I mean, usually you're seeing these trends that are going to work. And you know, with traders, they'll look at past charts and what happens, you know, based on, you know, historical data. And, you know, 9 out of 10 times this usually happens. And almost 10 out of 10 times when you see, you know, the dollar going higher, you know, usually you'll get a pullback in oil. But, you know, again, with this type of market and a trader's environment, what are you looking at? How are you staying ahead of the curve from a trader's perspective? Is it just, you know, close my eyes and just, you know, the trend's your friend and just stay aboard this, you know, this train?
Well, there's been a rotation. I mean, you look at the biotechs recently. I don't know if you've been watching them, but they've been ridiculous. I don't know if there's any particular reason. Maybe there's a couple of takeover things going on. You know, maybe a company here or there is getting closer to approval of a product. But yet many of the companies that are out there are no closer or further away, but they've been just screaming higher. So is it this whole, hey, really well thought out concept that, you know, we have an aging population, there's more need for drugs and the need for cancer cures and all this. And you know what? We're going to play the biotechs. Or is it more like, wait, why are we seeing the utilities hit an all-time high and the consumer staples doing really well? And, you know, how long did consumer staples do well with the dollar being as high as it is with the headwinds that we're seeing? And, you know, it's a very strange environment because you'll see 4 or 5 days of a move into a particular sector and then they'll rip their guts out and move into another sector. You know, and you see Apple dropping off a cliff and then it decides to rise one day, you know, and it kind of moves up dramatically. What's the reason? Technical levels, et cetera. Yeah, that's great. But the more that we see the markets being resistant and resilient to downturns, there's two things that happen. The first thing is, yes, it gets you more and more nervous because I think margin, the leverage and margin balances that we have currently on the books are at the same height they were back in, you know, the heyday in 2007, 2008. So there's a lot of margining going on. That's first of all. Volumes have been pretty light, which means that things can move around pretty well with illiquidity in the markets. Money's being pushed in from other countries. And I think that when you see these records being broken, the retail investors are pretty much crying uncle and saying, okay, I just put it in. I've gotten more calls from people recently that, you know, may have been out or not involved or, you know, whatever, that says, you know what? Where do you think? You know, you think, you know, both sides, is it going to continue going up or is it going to go down? Either way, I want in on the action.
You know, final question on this topic here is what can push this market lower? For me, I've been warning people on this podcast that when economic turn weak, at least over the past 3 to 4 years, where we saw that normal pullback seller may go away, you know, you saw economic data get weaker, much weaker right before the market collapsed. And right now, you haven't really been seeing it. Some, you know, in the manufacturing, we're seeing good unemployment numbers are, you know, are good. Unemployment rates going down. We're seeing, you know, okay data, not enough to be scary. But what are some of the indicators that you're looking at that you could see, you know, push this market lower? What are the risks out there you could tell investors, hey, if you see this, you know, it's time to start taking profits and be smart?
Well, I think that, first of all, I think manufacturing data is extremely important. I look at the factory orders in underneath that. And clearly I've seen over the last, you know, several months, factory orders really starting to slow down, inventories rising, which means sales aren't really happening. And then that goes into the whole manufacturing arena. Then you got the Philly Fed and the Empire State and all these guys that are really off pretty badly. Now, a lot of people will be chalking that up, you know, the analysts chalking that up to, well, we're really not as much as a manufacturing anymore. We have more IT and all that. But, you know, if we have all this IT, why aren't they doing that well? You know, we saw Cisco come out with some good numbers, at least better than they expected. And that stock, by the way, was up 12%. Which took back pretty much the entire move for the last year and a half in one day. So first of all, I think there is we're reaching a point of stocks when they start going parabolic. That's a concern. And if you look over the last 2 weeks in particular, and you look at some stock charts where you saw a lot of consolidation for a couple of weeks prior to that, and then they just went, when I say vertical, 90 degrees, a lot of stocks. And that's good, you know, but I think that's a lot of leverage coming in. When it comes to the economics, the jobs numbers are a blessing and a curse. If in fact companies are relying on cutting expenses because they have lower revenue to meet their EPS targets. And by the way, the EPS game of beating estimates is a pretty big joke. They're going to beat estimates. But if they don't meet estimates, it's because they didn't communicate to the analysts what their expectations really were and something fell short. The fact is that if you look at earnings growth, it has been slowing down on a year-over-year basis was how you look at this. And that's a problem. But, you know, it's a confidence game, Frank. And the fact is that there's confidence somehow right now in, you know, in things. If we don't see a sequester cut and a payroll tax increase, cut the spending habit, or it did cut it, but not really cause any kind of negative consumer sentiment. And if the Fed is getting to a point that, frankly, they really shouldn't be pumping so much money in the system anymore. If you look at some of these numbers, there's no reason for them to be continuing this ridiculously record purchase. They should back off a little bit. They kind of talked about that through these Hilsenrath columns recently, but, you know, it's kind of both sides. They've been saying keep on pumping it in. And they will create a bubble. And in fact, if you see some of the housing markets around the country, there are a few that are starting to get way overheated again. You know, they're climbing over people to buy things.
Yeah, they definitely are. It's a good point too, because, you know, you look at the Fed and their stance is, you know, we want to see the unemployment rate at a certain level before we stop. Or, you know, we want to make sure inflation is controlled. It's not going higher before we stop. And you know what? You're looking at the inflation numbers, the data that the Fed looks at, not the data that we look at and spend every day, the real data. The data the Fed looks at says that prices aren't going up.
Right.
So this policy might, you know, accommodative policy might remain, you know, at least for another 12 months. A lot of people say in 2015, 2016. I mean, is that what we're looking at with this huge bull market as long as we have the Fed, like just with the pedal to the metal here?
It's all about the Fed, I think. And as a matter of fact, this week they came out with an article through Hilsenrath, the mouthpiece of the Fed in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, excuse me, that talked about how maybe the numbers that are being looked at that people think is the ones that the Fed looks at, the CPI numbers, less food and energy core, is really not. It's more like the PCE numbers, part of GDP. Da, 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 da. And I'm like, wait a minute. Now you're changing the rules again?
Rules always change here. Don't I mean, yeah, you buy a bag of potato chips. The price is the same. They're right. You just, instead of getting like 15 potato chips, you're getting 7 now. I mean, seriously, but the services much less from what you pay for. I mean, is this factored into it? Because that's a pretty big deal. You know what I mean? Where people like, well, I used to charge $70 an hour. Well, you know, whatever it is, it's like, you know, they're still charging, you know, maybe they charge, instead of raising their prices, they'll only work for 45 minutes now. So, I mean, you know, the productivity level, what we're paying for, we're not getting what we pay for anymore. But, I mean, and I can't be alone on this. I mean, you could email me, fcurtis@stansburyresearch.com. I mean, I'm seeing prices across the board for every single bill that I pay, whether it's DirecTV, whether it's, electricity, whether it's water, utilities, whatever it is. Every bill is higher than it was last year. Every single bill. But everything that they're telling me is that prices are fine. They're not going higher.
Yep. No, I agree. And here's, I think, the answer to that question you asked. You know, what is going to turn things? It seems to me that right now that there is a bid to markets. And again, regardless of how high the dollar is, and if the yen keeps on moving higher, the correlated trade right now is much greater there than it is with the euro. Euro used to be the big play. And as long as they keep on pushing that yen, there's excess money that's coming into the markets, regardless of the news of the economics, because you've seen it both sides. You see when the economics are bad, it drops for a little while, then it comes right back. But when economics are good, they or at least perceived to be good, they are moving things in a big way up. But valuations are getting very stretched, on markets. That can go on for a long time, by the way. The longer it goes on, the bigger the potential problem you have, because you get, which I hate using the word bubble, but you get these kind of bubbles that will be produced. It, you know, the economics will be the best before they start turning, right? You follow what I'm saying? They're gonna peak at a point. And the markets will be at a top before they start turning. And, you know, and then when that happens, it's usually going to be a swift situation. I don't know between maybe mutual fund inflows where they're just doling out, you know, they're just kind of buying into the markets right now. And it kind of just, you know, they're being forced to just buy in, whether it's hedge funds really ramping up their exposure, whether it's money coming from outside into the U.S. I mean, you know, maybe if the dollar starts dropping, which is counterintuitive, there'll be a pull. And you'll see that maybe, you know, people won't want the stocks because right now what they're getting is if they put their money in the markets, from foreigners, put their money in our markets, they're getting an increasing dollar and an increasing stock market. That's not usually the way things work.
No, it's a good point.
And they're getting double the benefit.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, we're talking to Andrew Horowitz. You know, it's fantastic, fantastic podcast. Disciplined Investor, guys. You get a chance to listen to one of the best podcasts on iTunes. You're also a money manager, a good buddy and everything. And, you know, you don't really often want to have you on these podcasts talk about yourself or your company, but, talk about some of the things that you're doing right now. I know you're very excited about a trading service that you have and things like that. And just, if you could give us like 2 minutes on some of the things that you're working on right now.
Yeah. I mean, we have this, you know, one of the things that a lot of investors are looking for, you know, quote unquote tips, and they'll listen to a TV show and they'll, you know, there's somebody rattling off all sorts of names. And the question is, what do you buy? What do you do? Well, we have a service where we actually give you very high probability setups for either breaking up or breaking down. So we send you out either via email or via text and you get an actual stock and it says, hey, here's the level you buy. Here's the level you sell. Here's the level you take your profit target at with the basic theory behind it, utilizing some really neat algorithms that we built. You don't get them daily, or you may get some daily. You know, you may get three a week. You may get two a week. You may get one a week, but we're looking for higher probability trading setups. And when you look at the history, we've been doing this for exactly like this for over a year and change. We're up about 12-13%. And that's with short-term trading. In other words, you're in, we kind of, you know, note the upside downside and then you move out. And the downside has been very, very little, even though you're looking at a market that's been on a general uptrend, of course. But the fact is that we're both short and long. So the shorts are also paying off pretty well in that scenario as well. You know, we manage money also in a couple of different strategies. We have our global strategies, which $500,000 minimum. We're more traditional, utilizing a very specific strategy of, global allocation, again, more traditional. Then we have our actively traded strategy, which is a long, short options in, out of the market, depending on the circumstance, and some hedging in there. And frankly, the hedging, as you mentioned, has been just horrendous. It just doesn't work. You know, you got to keep on doing it because, you know, there are times that it makes sense to do so and you got to kind of pull out, pull in and kind of move that around the hedges a bit. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, that's kind of the play where you want to find more of the high growth stocks and the ones that are really going to look to break out dramatically. And, you know, we may hold something for a day, a week, a month, a year. As I always say, I love a stock as long as it loves me. And, you know what I'm saying?
No, that's true. And you might have to raise that minimum from 500,000 to a million because don't you have like daughters that just graduated college and, you know, maybe get married pretty soon or?
Yeah. And one that's going to graduate school. You got to remind me of these things, right? I mean, I'm very proud of her going to Columbia and all that, but have you seen the cost? That's another whole discussion. I do not understand the escalation in costs for college.
You got to keep them in the state. I mean, you got to – whatever. Graduate school in Florida, you'll be fine. As long as you're going to the state that you live in, you're fine. Outside of that, it's like, what is it, 4 or 5 times the cost?
It's unbelievable, and yeah. I don't understand what has actually escalated because you still got the same school. You got the maybe a couple of new buildings, the same books you got to buy on your own anyway. Dorms
definitely
and all
the
that.
Same teachers. Those teachers, right. Definitely the same teachers. They're like
years
old over there.
So. I guess. But, yeah, so I want to talk about that. So the other thing is that, you know, I think just to get back to this point, and I think it's extraordinarily important – is this whole currency war issue, which they're saying isn't going on. The Aussie is dropping off a cliff, by the way. Material stocks have been just horrible. Have you seen the gold stocks? I mean, honestly, I'm starting to feel really bad for Paulson.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you, too, because, of course, we're going over, you know, when we both do these podcasts, you and I, Andrew, you know, we talk about the big picture, and then we really get into the fun stuff. But it's important to look at what's going on in the market, every single avenue, where it's economics, it's, you know – every place. So, you know, we want to see what's going on with the economy, the numbers that come up. Then we want to get into individual stocks and individual sectors. And that's what I was leading to with mm-hmm. gold here. It's pretty scary. I mean, I'm hearing forecasts out there that, I mean, personally, I think gold is going to go a lot lower. I mean, it's an asset class that's been up tremendously over the past 12 years, just like whether it's housing, whether it's internet stocks. I mean, it's an incredible run to the point where, you know, okay, it doesn't necessarily – I mean, you could have said that after 8 or 9 years, but today it's different. I mean, gold is used as a currency hedge, and right now, you know, the dollar's perfect according to everybody out there. Everything's fine. Our economy's doing great, and – you know, you're looking at an alternative to gold. Where would you rather put your money in some of these gold stocks? You're seeing costs dramatically rise to produce an ounce of gold if you're looking at gold stocks. And you're looking at the cost come down dramatically. So you're looking at the price come down dramatically now. So, you know, where would you rather put your money in these companies? Or people are like, well, you know, I'm watching Disney go from 40 to 65. I'm watching, you know, McDonald's, Walmart, all-time highs. Maybe I should just put my money in these safe stocks and get 2, 3% yields.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at some of these gold stocks, forget the juniors, there's the regular baseline gold stocks. I mean, they are just horrendous. I mean, it is a bloodbath likened to what we saw almost like with the banks back in, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009. I mean, it's a bloodbath. And you're right. The costs have gone up. And the problem is when you have costs going up and the actual material that you have to buy to make it going down, you have a major squeeze going on and of margins. And, you know, there's a lot of problems with that. You know, you also have a lot of people that had, positions on that they took off because there's no inflation. When the economy gets better, there's a question of whether or not there's a benefit of having gold. Maybe central banks have been selling gold. That's another discussion that has to be had in Europe. They're possibly selling some gold. And, but the big issue right now is if you believe in a sector rotation, then what you have to think about is, hey, maybe I'll start nibbling on some of these companies. Are they going to go bankrupt? I mean, like a Newmont Mining or, you know, even a Freeport that has some exposure to that, although more copper, which has also been horrible. There's a place in the portfolio for it. I don't know when that's going to turn. There's been a couple of false turns recently. But if gold does break down and start continuing to move lower and into the 1300 and 1200 range, I mean, these companies are going to get obliterated.
There's going to be bankruptcies, especially on the mid-cap to small level, and the large ones are going to get hit much, much more. And I'm going to tell you something. I did a segment on this last week. If you look, and when you get a chance, because I know you look at the statistics and the fundamentals, the earnings estimates for gold stocks are off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Newmont Mining is supposed to earn, I think it was $3.36, which is, I want to say, a 20% increase from 2012 to 2013. And then next year, they're only expecting a 10% decline. There's zero chance they're going to make that number, zero.
I know. You're
looking at cost and you listen to the CEOs, they say you can't produce an ounce for under $1,200. And most of them, it's more than $1,300. We're at that point where they're going to be losing money per every ounce that they produce. So if we see gold price come down further, believe me, you haven't seen nothing yet with gold stocks. They're going to come down a lot further. So, I'm saying this and it's so scary. Maybe that's a contrarian point or saying, hey, you know, price are going to go higher. Maybe this is the buying point. But guys, if you're thinking about buying gold, just be careful because they can go down a lot further. Goldman Sachs is the biggest bear that I know on gold, and their price for gold this year is $1,390. Everybody else is $1,500 to $1,900. I mean, yes, they're not going to be there.
Somebody shot out $1,100, I think, the last couple of days.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's pretty ugly.
Yeah, I'm saying that these estimates have to come down, and you know, these like J.P. Morgan, who says gold price is going to be $1,800, they're basing all the estimates on all the gold stocks they cover on $1,800 gold prices. It's $1,350, $1,390 right now. So those estimates have to come down dramatically. And the estimate is all that matters on TV, just like Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola saw sales decline year over year. I thought the quarter was horrible. But they beat estimates, so the stock went up 5% after they reported. These guys are not going to beat estimates. You're going to see every single gold company miss by a mile unless these estimates come down. So,
right.
You know, if you're looking at, hey, you know, I want to buy a sector that's totally beaten down and sentiment's terrible. Sentiment is not terrible in gold. I still know a lot of people that like gold. And those estimates have not come down yet. So just be careful with gold, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. But just to get back to what you're mentioning, the earnings estimate game, the big issue right now is that I think back in 2000, you know, there was a lot of people saying, hey, I can't buy Amazon. I can't buy this company. I can't buy that company because there's no earnings and there's no, but you know, a lot of what happened was the stock started moving up. And people said, you know, it's the emperor has a, you know, new clothes or the emperor's new clothes or whatever that story is where he's walking around naked. Everybody's like, yeah, great outfit there. Everybody's buying into the fact that you know, this is a new situation and it's okay to have valuations as high on some of these stocks. And it's okay to be breaching all these levels in terms of technical levels of overbought, oversold. And it's okay because. And I frankly think the Fed is the most reckless of them all. I mean, the what they have done, I agree they've reinflated the stock market. They've done a decent job at bringing down rates to try to reinflate the real estate market. But some of this other things that they've done have gone a little bit overboard to keep interest rates at zero when you have an economy that's actually growing in terms of not contracting, right? I mean, just kind of moving forward or at least stabilizing is, I think, criminal. And to keep on buying bonds is out of control because that's essentially, you know, devaluing the currency, although they're not staying ahead of it because they got a much more powerful central bank in terms of the amount of gunpowder they're using in Japan. And, you know, this is going to start to become a very big problem if it continues because, you know, you can't say this time is different. It's just not. Now, maybe, you know, okay, 1300 with the current levels of earnings was low. But, you know, is 1600, 1700 getting to the outside of this? I mean, it seems that we're at the same, a little bit higher earnings, definitely a little higher than we were at the height prior, but that's when valuations were very stretched as well. The difference is that banks are in generally better shape now, most of them, by the, you know, across the board. You know, we have less of a real estate problem because obviously a lot of the delinquencies and a lot of the, you know, the houses that were not able to be paid are kind of out of the system or at least, you know, kind of on the side. The difference though is now that we have, instead of the leverage being on the books of the companies and the books of the, and the balance sheets of the individuals, it's on the sovereigns. That's where all the leverage is. So if in fact somehow we see a turn where, for example, in Japan, it's already happening, their bond rates are starting to rise, even though they are pounding them and doing their best to buy as many bonds out there as they can. Their yields have risen about 40%, which is off that very small number, over the last week or so. We actually hold a position in short Japanese bonds, figuring that what they're doing is possibly going to end up having a downgrade. Or at least if nothing else, they're going to end up having such a problem that investors are going to revolt and take their money out, which they are. They're taking their money out. So the only net buyer of this really is the government. So, you know, and who in their right mind wants to be in a 0.4% 10-year anyway?
Yeah, no, I like that trade, actually. You're probably going to see a downgrade on that as well. But, you know, we're running out of time here. We got a couple minutes left. I wanted to talk about a few more topics here. And one of them I was going to say, since we were talking about gold and everything else, maybe a good place to put our money is China stocks. I mean, you had Caterpillar announce a $500 million write-off for one of its China divisions that they found out didn't exist. Numerous small caps faking the financials. You know, those companies now bankrupt. And you just sent me an article, which is kind of funny. On a bigger scale, Bloomberg reports that China may be lying about its trade data. We're talking about like a near $200 billion number. How can we take China, or take this country serious right now?
I have no idea because there's been rumors for a long time, right, that some of the trade data may be questionable. But one of the things they're doing is you have to remember the government of China, there are more billionaires in the government that work for the government in China than anywhere. And to get to be a billionaire working for the government, if you think about that, how does that exactly happen? Well, they get basically paid like corporate executives. And one of the things that they do is they try to make sure that their regions and their sectors and their cities and towns have the greatest amount of growth and you know, numbers of surplus of income than they can. Well, one of the problems is that they're doing things like shipping things and then bringing it back. And then they're holding an inventory and they're double counting certain things. And maybe it goes to Hong Kong. It's being double counted. And that's a big concern. And China, by the way, is the one that's bringing this up. China is investigating. So no longer is it just out there that, hey, maybe there's a problem with the way that they're doing their accounting, you know, and they need to do a review of this and possibly restate if they do that. But they're the ones that have said, hey, there's something going on here that's not right. And we think that there's a bunch of either double counting or miscounting of what the actual exports were. Because if you looked at the exports recently, you got to scratch your head saying, wait a minute, U.S. exports to the U.S. are down. Europe is down, And how did they magically have such a high number of exports?
It's true.
You know, so it's a problem. And, you know, if there is that amount of inability for the government to watch the government, how could the government be watching individual companies? So I think there's a lot of hesitation when it comes to China. That doesn't mean it can't all of a sudden start doing something. One of the things they did is they started to lower the yuan reference rate. And after letting it ride up and, you know, to multi-year, decade and almost all-time highs against the dollar, they said, wait a minute, what are we doing here? Our economy's slowing. We're putting some clamps down on real estate. You know, the banks are showing massive losses and loan reserve requirements that are increasing. And at the same time, we're increasing the value of our currency when everybody else is dropping it. So, you know, hey, by the way, a quick statistic for you. Since 2008, do you know the number of rate cuts by central banks around the world? Any thoughts on how many there are in total?
Wow, that's a good question. How many in total?
Mm-hmm.
Since when? 2008?
Since this all started, you know, the stuff started in 2008.
That's why I think, you know, I want to say that our short-term rate, weren't they like 3% in 2008? No, they're like, what, 0.25.
Yeah, but how many in the world, in the whole world?
In the world, no, I'm just saying just from there, you have like 10 to 15. I don't know. I don't know how many. What would be to get? I know that number is extremely high.
515.
Are you kidding me? Is that
515. And when when I read this article and got the numbers at first, it was 511, by the way, and that was only last week.
Yeah.
That was last week.
Yeah.
Since then, cool. I think Poland is cut. Israel's cut. There was one or two other cuts around the world.
Yeah.
Oh, Korea, I think, cut. So that's three right there. So you're at 515, and I may not be counting everything that's out there. 515 rate cuts. And what's really interesting is that the rate cuts are still going on. And you have to say, wait a minute. I thought that the world economy was getting better. How come we still need to be seeing rate cuts continuing? Why aren't they stabilizing, and why are we seeing all these countries having these rate cuts, which is, by the way, another currency manipulation or currency moving action, and therefore maybe these countries are trying to bring down their currency to keep, you know, pace with what's going on in these other countries to be competitive.
Yeah, it's just fun. Like, what, as an investor, you know, you're looking back at, you know, you're looking at the markets and you're saying, okay, you know, we want to grow, but don't grow so fast. You don't want to grow so fast because that's going to be bad for stocks. You know, and then the Fed's going to leave. So we want you to grow. We don't want to grow too fast. You know, it's kind of like you have this medium there where, you know, you don't want things to be too great. You just want them to be okay. And that kind of,
I don't
weird.
Know. I would
if
like.
If I own a business, I want things to be absolutely fantastic. Not, no. Make sure we're not growing that fast, because if we are, we're going to be in trouble. The interest rate's going to go higher. You
know? Frank, I'm voting to get the Fed out of the markets.
Never
because happened. I cannot, it is so difficult to truly gauge and do price discovery on what the economy should be when we have this kind of pacemaker that keeps on going off every time there's a blip. And, you know, the problem is that not only are they involved, they're ridiculously involved. The parade of Fed speakers that come out, of course, the voting members are always dovish and the non-voting members are hawkish.
Yeah, no,
right?
True.
And they're involved in leaking information. They're involved in pressing this button over here, over there. I mean, it's really gotten to a point that you have to wonder, can this economy survive without this? And what would people do if the Fed stepped away just even slightly? But because the Fed is not supposed to be as actively involved in markets as they are. It's really at a point of it's gotten way out of hand. And more so that the entire world has bought into the idea that it's okay to do so, and their feds are just all over it too.
Yeah, definitely at a point of no return. Well, I tell you what, we got about 5 minutes here. I want to play a little game with you. This is for the listeners here. We always do a lot of stock research. We're always recommending a lot of stocks. We'll go six stocks in 6 minutes. So
okay.
You'll go one stock, I'll go one stock. Give me one of your favorite ideas in a minute while you like. This way we throw some ideas out for the listeners. So do you want to start or you want me to start?
You can start. Go ahead.
Okay. One of the stocks that crossed my list that I really, really like is Tibco Software, TIBX. And this, I actually had this guy on my podcast, Vivek Randhawa. He owns the Golden State Warriors. He's a billionaire. Great guy. He's funny. One of the most wealthiest people in India. And, you know, he was talking about his stock, and it was funny because the stock, I think, was like 27, 28, and it got crushed to 18. They missed two consecutive quarters. But right now, you know, especially where it seems like it's almost like a Kulik setup type to me. I recommended Kulik, a big data play. It was 30, went to 17. Now it's 30 again, and we were able to get in like 17, 18. The company's completely beat up. It's cheap, like a software company. Margins are high. Cash flow's huge. Great balance sheet. I just think right now with Tuco, I think I saw one of the major hedge funds. I forgot which ones just started to take a position in it. But Tuco Software is one that I would tell investors to take a look. I'm doing a lot more research on it. But it's a fantastic company. It's gotten really beat up, had a couple of bad quarters. But as you know, these companies that have bad quarters, especially if they're good quality companies, even like the IBMs, people just rush into them. I think you can see a quick 20, 30% gain. That's one of the ones I like. So you're up.
Okay, Align Technologies. And this is a company that does the Invisalign for your teeth, you know, whereas it's braces, but a very they're clear and some of them go behind. But basically, they're unobtrusive. And they are expanding around the world. One of the things, okay, somebody's going to beat me up for this, but I've been around the world, okay? And they have bad teeth in Japan. I'm just saying, okay? And in Asia, they just, maybe it's just a genetic, I don't know what it is, okay? I got the theory that maybe they don't eat a lot of hard food. They eat a lot of soft food. I don't know. Bottom line is that this whole thing is starting to pick up a little bit. And with the westernization of the world and if they're getting into these areas around the world and starting to push, Align Technologies, symbol ALGN, has some great growth. They did have one quarter recently that wasn't so good, but they have some great growth. And I think the opportunity for the vanity play around the world to help where people don't want to wear those bulky braces and, you know, with the different colors and the rubber bands and all that is something really neat for this company.
Well, Tipco's a mid-cap. Let me give you the large cap. And a large cap here, people are familiar with. I'm still a huge fan of DirecTV. They came out with a blowout quarter. Very familiar with the company. I won't go over the analysis too much because I really beat this company to death, especially over the past 3 to 4 weeks. But, yeah, I like to give a mid-cap, large cap, small cap here. The large cap, I can't find a better large cap named DirecTV. They're cheap as hell, trading 10, 11 times forward earnings. They're growing those earnings at 20% plus. It's going to continue at least for the next 4 years as they upgrade, you know, all their equipment to the new Genie, which gives you high definition and you could take more shows and more hard drive space. Yeah, it's just a fantastic company right now. I love their structure. I love their customer service. So, DirecTV, DTV, I think that, you know, again, it's a company that listeners are familiar with. I've been pounding it, but you know what? I'm going to stick with it because I still think there's tremendous upside and Buffett's all over it. Still,
yeah,
likes,
again,
still
Buffett just took a piece of it.
He took a piece of it and now he took even more. He's buying even more, but I think the company has at least 25-30% upside for me over the next 12 months.
All right, let me give you back. I mentioned earlier 3D systems. The 3D printing, not craze, but the opportunity is enormous. If you think about the fact that you want to make a cog or a widget or something, I'm not talking large things right now, but you want to make something and you could take an AutoCAD system, design it, and basically make it on the fly. And as this technology continues to grow with the 3D printing, you can have just-in-time product replacement, a parts replacement. So, for example, let's say that you own a 1972 Chevy Impala and you know, you can't find parts, you got to order it and all that. Well, wouldn't it be great to go to a place that has the actual CAD design of this because they're available, let's say, through a catalog and can actually put out this part for you? And therefore, you can, you know, you need it for your car and it's just made exactly to spec. And it goes on and on with the things. And yes, there's been some discussion about how you can make these plastic guns right now, but you know, you can make that out of anything. But 3D printing, there's only a few players out there. And the one, although this is a very volatile stock and it'll move around, but the earnings came in reasonable recently. The stock is being bid up. It's being talked about. It's still a very, very new technology. So 3D symbol DDD. And you look at the earnings growth of this thing and it looks really like it's on a nice place.
The more speculative name for me and the last one of the three is, Allscripts, MDRX. It's a company where in December completely bottomed out. I actually bought this for my personal account. And, you know, just everything was going terrible. They fired the CEO. They were supposed to be sold and they said not going to be sold. So, you know, when they weren't sold, I guess you got to basically hire new management and everything. But, you know, great, great company here. I like them a lot. You look at the fundamentals starting to come around. But more important, you're seeing the company was actually at $9 and it's all the way up to 14 now. I mean, it just got completely beat up. I think it was in the 20s and it just crashed. You know, at 14, I just saw something interesting that insiders, you know, major insider buys here at 14, which is their 52-week high. It's something I really like to see when CEOs or insiders are buying stocks when they need an all-time high. I mean, usually you see it when they get crushed, and you are seeing those insider buys. But right now, you're actually seeing the insiders still buy the stock here. I still think this company has loads of potential, and it's probably going to get bought out in the 20s, later on. So it's just a complete meltdown in December. Stock fell below 10, which is surprising, but that's my more speculative play. That's my third name.
Well, the question is, should I go with something short or long here? I can go short, right?
Go short. Yeah, go short.
I can go short. I can have some shorts. Okay. So, all right. I'll go short. And this is kind of a stock that's well loved out there. And it is, it has some good things about it. It's not going to be like this a massive move down, but Yum Brands. Yeah, Yum Brands has been having a problem. They've been they are one of the favorite foods in China, which I think 50% of the revenue comes from China. One of the big things that happened was the chicken scare with the, you know, the bird flu and all that. And you know, you have to understand the culture in China. They're very superstitious. They're very, you know, they don't blow things off like we do here. The way that they do things there is a little bit different in terms of their overall, we'll call it hygiene and cleanliness of the poultry and the meats. But one of the things is that it really spooked the people that were buying this Kentucky Fried Chicken, which is they love there in China. They just love the Kentucky Fried Chicken. And, they really saw a dramatic drop in their revenues and their same store sales. I mean, down, you know, 20 something plus percent on a last quarter and the quarter before the same thing. One of the things they're doing is they're changing the menu to make it much more regional. So they have things that are like Chinese food style, local things on the menu, which, by the way, in my opinion, is totally against what their basic reason for going to a Kentucky Fried Chicken was in China, which was to get your crispy chicken and all that good stuff. The problem is that if they have that much exposure to China and they're seeing that much of slowdown and significant competition, you know, you may finally see these shares roll over. They've been holding up, even though their earnings have been awful, with the hope that one day it will get better, which it may. But it's the same concept as JCPenney for a moment, where JCPenney, people started to move away from it because they didn't want to utilize that store because they didn't like the new design. And it went on for several quarters. And what happened was that people said, you know what, let me look at all their alternatives. And they started to shop the other alternatives instead of just going to JCPenney. And we know the rest of the story from there. Well, if we do see that customers are going to start moving to other places and they're going to be testing other areas, they may find that they like those. And whether or not the bird flu situation clears up, you know, now or, you know, next month or in 6 months from now, because it will cycle around a bit. The fact is that I do get a little bit concerned about Yum Brands because they have now their, you know, they create their own little competition and their, you know, the loyalty from their customers may kind of start to slow down.
Yeah, you know, I just looked at Yum Brands now. I never knew it had an enterprise value of $34 billion. I never realized it was that big. I thought it was like $20, $25 billion. I never realized how big Yum Brands was.
Enormous. I mean, that's they have incredible. Other products and all that, but about, I think about close to 50% of their revenue stream is from Asia, from China.
Yeah, I know. It's a big Asia play, and it's interesting, and that's been the risk of it. But you know what? It's trading in the midpoint of its range. It seems like, you know, people are optimistic about it, trying to buy this thing as it dips, but – yeah, I agree with you. I'm not a big fan of Yum Brands here. I think it's a pretty expensive stock trading at, you know, 19 times forward earnings, but great way to finish off the podcast,
yeah,
right?
I
you
think
know
so.
As well as I do. People love ideas. They also love the big picture outlook. I think they've learned a lot and, one of my best guests by far, Andrew. You know, you really are. I always get positive emails, and I just, really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And
it's always fun. I love talking to you.
We'll definitely keep in touch, and I know you'll join me again. And again, we'll keep doing this every couple of months because I know you want, you know, at least our listeners' favorite guest on the show.
Oh, so you're the best! And make sure to leave a iTunes review of Frank's show so that when people look at it, they know how great you really love Frank and all the things that he does and how he helps you and all that. Seriously, leave a review over at iTunes on Frank's show.
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. Really. So listen, I'll definitely talk to you soon, and yeah, we'll get together with the families.
Okay, buddy. Bye.
Okay, take care. All right, guys. Great stuff from Andrew. Let me know what you thought of that format. I mean, you know, usually you have educational segments, I have questions, and I have my analysis. And sometimes people are like, Frank, I don't want to hear you anymore. I'm sick of hearing you. I want to hear your guests. That was a long interview. Do you think it was too much? Do you like the 20-minute interviews? Okay, this podcast is about you, not about me. F. Curzio, StansberryResearch.com. I want to thank Andrew for coming on and doing a long interview. Because, again, you know, I try to get long interviews, but most of my guests are pretty popular, pretty busy. It's not easy. So they try limit it to 20, 30 minutes tops. And Andrew was on there for a pretty long time, which was cool. Okay, guys, like I said earlier, no market analysis questions or educational segment this week. But next week, you know, I'll be back at kind of the original format, definitely taking questions in an educational segment. Also next week, I'm going to share with you some of my favorite ideas from the editors conference. So it's going to be real interesting. I want to say thanks so much for listening. If you have any questions, comments, email me, fkurzio@stansberryresearch.com. Still have the $39 special for my newsletter, Small Stock Specialist. Getting a ton of people come in, especially from the compounding idea, small cap stocks, trading at, low multiples, high yields, but raising their dividend just as long as, McDonald's and Coca-Cola annually. So, these are great stocks. They're cheap. And, I read an email last week about compounding strategy, how anybody could do this. Just put a couple $1,000 away, compound those earnings, those dividends. And it's a fantastic strategy. Again, I have three stocks in my portfolio right now to fit that compound strategy over the next year. It's going to probably be like 5 to 8 in over 2 years. I'm going to try to build that up to 10. So take advantage of this offer now if you want $39. Don't email me 3-4 weeks from now, because once this offer ends, it ends. And $39 is really cheap to have my newsletter for an entire year. But again, I want you guys to buy my newsletter and be subscribed for the next 10, 20 years. This gives you an opportunity with this price. And don't forget to visit us online, www.stansberryradio.com, so you can subscribe to our mailing list, send us direct messages, download our podcast, see other cool things. Again, that's www.stansberryradio.com. I will see you in 7 days. Take care.
The information presented on SNA Investor Radio is the opinion of its hosts and guests. You should not base your investment decisions solely on this broadcast. Remember, it's your money and your responsibility.
S&A Investor Radio is produced by Stansberry & Associates Investment Research, the leader in investment newsletters.
Love this episode of Wall Street Unplugged? I think you'll really love Wall Street Unplugged Premium. The Wall Street Unplugged Premium is my members-only podcast where I dive even deeper into this week's events. Well, I'll do even more than tell you what's moving these markets. I'll tell you specifically what moves you can make today. So this is going to be about trading. Put big money in your pocket right away due to the inconsistencies I see daily in the market. I'm talking about specific investment ideas I'm recommending and tracking each week that I believe will be impacted directly by everything I just talked about today. Plus, you're going to get the chance to go even further down the rabbit hole with me and my co-host, who's Daniel Creech, as we discuss which of these week's trends could turn into massive windfalls. Could the big trends that we see lurking on the horizon, also the news we're picking up from our network of insiders, which has gotten bigger and bigger thanks to you and so many people listening to this podcast in over 100 countries. And you'll get a chance to talk to me directly in my special Ask Me Anything Q&A session. All that and a lot more, like premium interviews with world leaders in finance, technology, industry, and politics. This is all part of Wall Street Unplugged Premium. And becoming a member is super simple and super cheap. So head on over to WSUOffer.com to check it all out. Sign up today and you won't miss a thing. That's WSUOffer.com.